Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Good morning, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. Today, I have the privilege of introducing Blair Palmer. She is a speaker, she is an author, she is a podcaster, and she is a coach. Blair is rethinking the future of work on a quest to create a blended life. Blair, I know you have been a journalist at the BBC for decades, and you took the leap and started your own leadership, your own consulting business, and toured Europe with your daughter and dog, and we want to hear all about it. Blair, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. Go right ahead and tell the audience something they wouldn't know about you.
Okay. Well, as you say, I was a BBC journalist for about 10 years. That was what I always wanted to do all through school, all through university. But when I actually got there, it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. It was very, very high pressure. I think I probably anticipated that, but it was not a very positive culture, shall we say. It was a very aggressive culture, a very macho culture. And after about 10 years, I'd had enough. So I left that job when I was 30 years old and started my coaching business. And this was in 2000. So it was a long time ago. And the world was pretty different 20 years ago than it is today. There was no social media. There was no podcasting, no blogging. None of that was going on. So if we fast forward, I built my coaching business, which was primarily about leadership. And I was doing very well. As you said, I'm a keynote speaker. I'd written various books. I had a good following. I had some fantastic clients. And then I would say about 3 or 4 years ago, I started feeling an emptiness. And that, you know, I'd been doing this business for more than 15 years. And I was in a bit of a rut, stuck in a bit of a rut. And I decided, well, the first thing I did actually, and this was about 2 years ago, so it took me a couple of years to get my head around, this isn't a feeling that's going to go away. Yes, I'm running my business and I should be feeling amazing, but I still feel like I have a terrible boss, like I have the worst boss in the world, and that boss is me, and she's really, really strict, and she's so cruel. She makes me work like 8, 9, 10 hours a day. I'm not even allowed to go to the toilet, you know. So I thought I have to do something about that. So the very first thing I did was I took my daughter out of school. She was 9, 10 years old at the time, nearly 10. And she wasn't very happy at school. And we tried a few different schools and none of that was working. And so I decided to home educate her. And the thing that happened as soon as I started home educating is I realized we're free, right? We can be anywhere. We don't have to live in this house and have this routine because there's no school run. There's no routine. There's no term time and holiday time. It's all one now. So we decided to make the most of that and we sold our house. We bought an RV, a very tiny RV actually, and we decided to go traveling around Europe together. So this was me, I'm a single mom. So it's me, my daughter, and our two dogs. And we thought we would do about a year. We ended up doing 7 months. We decided after 7 months that we were done. We'd seen what we wanted to see and we knew what we wanted our lives to be like when we got back. But we had 7 months out there in the world, living out of an RV, living out of Airbnbs and going where the wind took us. And that was my brilliant gamble. That whole kind of chapter of our lives, I consider my massive brilliance gamble.
It was a gamble. You went against the status quo. Tell our audience how difficult that is and how necessary.
Well, everyone says you're crazy, right? But I knew they would because I've been coaching people through change for nearly 20 years. And so I know that one of the things that stops us from changing, and particularly changing in a way that is authentic for us, is that we don't see many other people doing it. And one of the great things about social media, and if you particularly something like Instagram, for instance, is you do start to see people doing it. You see people, the sort of hashtag digital nomad, hashtag world schooling, all of this kind of hashtag RV living. You know, you start to see people doing things in a different way. And I started to think to myself, rather than being jealous of these people, why don't I become one? You know, I'm having such a strong reaction against them. I kind of hate them. How did they get to go and do these things and I'm stuck here? And luckily, I was kind of insightful enough to think, if you feel jealous, it's probably because you want to be them. You want to do it too. So yes, it is a risk. Of course it is. But it's also kind of a risk to live a life that's not true for you. Because in my way of thinking, you only get one go at this. And I'm getting older all the time, as we all are, but I'm nearly 50. I'll be 50 next year. And so you do start feeling the clock ticking and you think, if I'm not going to live my life now, when exactly am I going to do that? When do I get the reward for all that sacrifice? If it's not now, when is it going to happen? And so in a way, you're gambling with a lot more if you decide not to take these risks.
I love the way that you said that, because if you don't take the leap, you won't leave. I have a quote that I put together. If you don't leave, you won't live. Essentially, if you don't take that leap, if you don't actually assert yourself in a creative way, you don't put your best foot forward, if you don't actually detach, you won't get the opportunity to grow. You won't get the opportunity to learn. You won't get the opportunity to actually experience something different, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, all of that learning happens outside the comfort zone. When you're comfortable, that's nice. I'm not saying that people should be out of their comfort zone all the time. But when you're in that zone, there really is nothing to learn, nothing. And as human beings, I think that we are built for learning. That's when we're at our best, when we're just outside that comfort zone and having to stretch a bit. So when we're outside of that comfort zone, that's where all the learning is, and that's where all the richness is, and that, as you say, that's where life is.
Tell us about a brilliant gamble.
So I started calling this adventure of mine a brilliant gamble, and I started talking to other people about it, and I realized that there are various points in our lives where we do get a bit stuck. People have a sort of quarter life crisis. So, you know, about 25 or so, they have a little mini quarter life crisis. And then they have another one in their, can be late 30s, more likely mid 40s, where I was at the time. And at that point, a lot has changed. You know, the decisions you made about how you wanted to live 10 years ago, that was based on who you were 10 years ago. And so there is an opportunity in that midlife crisis for recalibration. And I realized as I talked to people that I wasn't alone, that there were a lot of women around my age and men too, who wanted to recalibrate or make some sort of big leap in their life midlife. And so I created the business, A Brilliant Gamble, to create content, to create programs, to create the podcast, all kinds of stuff to help people to actually make that leap so that they wouldn't leave it too late, that they would take this opportunity of not a midlife crisis, but a midlife awakening to do something new with their life and start a new chapter. And so that, for me, that's the business. That's the podcast. That's what I'm passionate about.
And I know in your podcast, you talk a lot about taking a gamble on yourself. Essentially, you want people to risk it all with
and you know, sometimes, so it is a gamble, but like you say, it's a gamble on yourself. It's a bet that you make with yourself. I'm actually not a big risk taker. I don't believe in wild, irrational risks. I don't believe in leaving your job and having no idea what's going to happen next, or, you know, setting off on a trip in an RV and not knowing where you're going to go or how you're going to make money. I'm not like that. I think that there is an amount of preparation for all of these things, and there is an amount of dipping your toe in the water. But when you, the real gamble, as you say, is I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to bet that I have within me what it takes to make this work. And if the first effort or the second effort or the third effort doesn't work, I'm going to go again. I'm going to bet on myself a fourth time and a fifth time. And the analogy I use is a bit like the game of snakes and ladders. You know that game, right? So you throw the dice, right? So snakes and ladders is a game of chance. You can't guarantee that you're going to throw the right number to get the ladder. And there's nothing you can do to prevent landing on a snake. And life is like that. So your job is to throw the dice, right? The rest of it is the universe's business, right? That's nothing to do with you. If you get a ladder, great. Off you go, up you go. If you get a snake, you might as well just woohoo, you know, as you slide down, because it's an inevitable part of the game. But you only lose the game if you stop throwing the dice. So you just got throwing.
And how do we, that's a great metaphor. How do you stop playing the game? How do we, in real life, we stop playing this game?
Well, I'm not sure you ever stop. I mean, of course, you get to the top of the board, the sort of square 100, and in a way you've won. But I think that because of human nature, we're always starting a new game. And I, in this sense, the game is a good thing. I mean, there are lots of games we play in life that are not good, sort of corporate games and political games and relationship games. None of those things are really good. But this is a really good game. This is the game of life. And seeing it as a game and seeing it as a thing that has the snakes and has the ladders and the squares with nothing in, you know, where you're just kind of twiddling your thumbs, that's okay. That's the richness of life. And as you're sliding down that snake, rather than thinking, I failed, there must be something wrong with me, I can't do this, everyone else can do it and I can't, you just accept, this is part of the game. When I land, am I going to throw again or am I going to give up? And really the only option is throw again.
I love how lighthearted you put it out. It's not that serious. Don't take yourself so serious. You have opportunities. You have another day. You have another chance. You have multitude of opportunities to try and try again. It's when we actually stop trying. It's when we give up. We give up to anxiety. We give up to depression. We give up to actually attaining any of our goals. We give up to even set the goals to begin with.
That's
and
right.
The game of life, yes, ceases to exist. But it's going to go on.
Yeah, it's going to go on with you or without you, actually. And it's not to say I don't have bad days. I do. And sometimes when business isn't going well, as it often doesn't, because that's the nature of things, I do feel low and worried and anxious. And, you know, I'm crying on my parents' shoulders or on my friend's shoulders. But I also know, because I've been doing this now for 20 years, I know that this too will pass. And I know that I'm allowed my moment of feeling terrible, and then I have to do something about it. I have to throw again.
Well put. And I love the way you talked about not wild risk, but being taking calculated risk is important. Life requires that we plan. Life requires that we take steps towards our goals. And you're not, like you said, just don't quit your job and don't know how you're going to pay your bills or eat or where you're going to live, but actually take a year to plan it out. Strategize, get on a budget so that you minimize, you become simplistic, almost like you did. You traveled for a year in an RV. You actually set yourself up for the bigger plans.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think, you know, you can over plan. I interviewed someone actually for my show who said, get 80% clear, right, on what you need to do. 80% prepared is enough. The other 20% you learn on the road. And that applies whether you're literally going to hit the road like we did or whatever it is, this whatever brilliant gamble you're embarking on. Most of the lessons, that 20%, which is where all the lessons are really, that you learn from doing it. And there's nothing you can do sitting at home or in the job that you hate or, you know, in the relationship that doesn't make you happy or in the country that you don't feel like is your home. There's nothing you can do from there to about the other 20%. You have to start the journey. And that's when you learn all the lessons. And I mean, we learned so many. I thought the big difficulty would be getting ready to go on the trip. Actually, all the lessons that we learned happened after we'd already gone, all of them.
Yeah. There's something to be said here that you cannot change your environment. You cannot change the surrounding, but you can change how you process it. You can change how you view it in return. You change yourself and your environment will change.
That's right. And actually, that was one of the things that I learned, which I thought that if I changed my situation, my state of mind would change. And it did not. And I realized, and you know, I know we're going to talk about morning routines because it's the whole point of the show, but one of the things I really realized was I have to change my routines, because we were in France. We were living in this beautiful old house surrounded by countryside, you know, not far from Paris. We really were in this incredible place, and I was unhappy. And I thought to myself, well, look, I can't blame my circumstances anymore because I left all of that behind. So it must be me who's bringing all this with me. I have to do something to change that.
I went through a similar situation. I lived in Boston and I lived in New York and just didn't feel at home, didn't feel like I fit in. But I realized I had a lot of baggage to shed. It was me. I was the problem. I was the culprit. But I, you know, it's hard to point the finger back at me. It's easier to point it on the outside or the people around me. And once I realized and made that awareness that I need to change, my mindset needed to change, I'm the problem, everything around me started to change. And it's magical the way that works. Let's get into a morning routine, because the habits that we do, we don't stumble upon success. You didn't stumble upon success. There's principles and habits that you took that allowed you to get up, dress up, and show up. So tell us about your morning routine.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I realized while we were in France was that the most important thing that I could do for myself and for my daughter was to be in the right state of mind during the day. That from that right state of mind, I would make much more conscious, authentic, wise choices. And so it seemed to me that how you start the day was really important then. And so my whole morning routine is about getting into state. So there are a few things that I do. And as I say, I discovered this in France and started working on it. It's got a bit more complicated over time, but it's got basics in it. So the first thing is I try not to wake up with an alarm. Now that's not always possible. I have appointments, things we need to do, places we need to go. But if it's not that kind of day, I try to wake naturally, and I wake pretty early actually, naturally. So the first is no alarm. Then I have by my bed my journal. So before my eyes are really even open, I'm reaching for my journal and I'm just kind of free flow, stream of consciousness stuff. I'm sure that you'll have other people on the show who'll talk about this because it's quite classic. But it really is just to understand how I've woken up. What state am I in, and what state, thinking about the day ahead, what state will I need to be in? And that will differ depending on the day. And the thing that's really important about this routine, I'm going to make it sound like it's the same every day, but it isn't, because that journaling then helps me to understand what I need to do next in order to get that state. So I might need to be in a really generous giving state for today if I've got a day full of coaching. If I'm giving a presentation, giving a keynote, I want to be feeling like the queen of the world, right? A completely different state of mind. So it defines what happens next. Normally, there's some meditation that follows that. I use various different apps. There's a brilliant app that I'm using at the moment called 10% Happier, which is really fun, and it's meditation for skeptics, and I love the guy that does it, Dan Harris. He's a former news journalist, TV presenter, who discovered meditation when he had a panic attack on TV. So he then turned to meditation to try to understand how to deal with these. So I often use those, but I'll pick a meditation that is intended to get me into the state that I've decided I need to be in. And then either some stretching or yoga or something that makes me laugh. So dancing, crazy stuff around my bedroom, or watching something funny on Netflix, or some comedy thing that I like. It, again, depends on the state that I need to be in, but some kind of external influence like Netflix or a podcast or something. Then I take a shower. So this is all before my shower. And then the final thing, and this is obviously, this is since we've come back, so we're back from our travels now, we have a lot of animals. We have dogs and rabbits and chickens and a hamster. And so before I get to do any work, I go and visit all the animals. Partly I have to, because I have to feed them and give them water and everything. They want to get up out of their little coop or whatever. But spending a bit of time with the animals first thing in the morning, then for me, that's like the icing on the cake. That's like, right, I'm ready now. And then I go and make my first cup of tea of the day. And then I'm pretty much ready to go. I have a system for my to-do list, which is that everything I need to do, I put onto post-its, and I allow, from that state that I'm in, I allow my intuition to tell me what's the first thing to do. And then I try to do that throughout the day. So whatever state I created in the morning, I'm trying to maintain that state, not get really adrenalized and, okay, that was great, but now I've got there's so much to do on my to-do list and emails and blah, blah, blah. I try to stay in this connected state. What's the next thing I should do? And then what's the next thing? And each time I finish one thing, I look at the post-its and I ask myself, okay, what's my body telling me is the next thing?
It sounds like you follow your intuition quite a bit. The consciousness just guides you, because you are giving yourself the opportunity to be still. You're giving yourself the opportunity to be quiet so you can hear the subconscious talking to you. So you can hear the intuition telling you, step here, step now, do this, do that. And that's very powerful. There's this tremendous power in that, because we don't, a lot of us, including myself, don't give ourselves the opportunity to be quiet enough, to meditate in the morning, to journal like you do, to actually let the divine just flow through you so you are guided. I find it, there's a reoccurring theme with animals and my listeners and my interviewers about animals and petting the animals, whether it's a dog, whether it's a livestock, whether it's the farm. They go out and they play with the animals, they talk, they touch them, and there's that sense of connectiveness, and I want you to talk about it a little bit, because I know they say animals are therapeutic, dogs are therapeutic, there's a therapeutic nature that takes place. Talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've grown up around animals. I grew up on a small holding, and I always felt very connected with the animals. And I agree that there is something, if you don't like animals, you're not going to get this from it. But if you do like animals and you don't have enough time around them, you probably do really miss that. There's something, and it's particularly funny with the chickens, because the chickens are not the like friendliest of animals. I mean, they don't really want you to cuddle them, like, yeah. But they do tolerate it. But they don't particularly love it. But one of the things that I love about the chickens is that they just have their very chickeny behaviors. You know, they're scratching in the earth and they're digging up little things and they're kind of arguing with each other, literally about the pecking order. I mean, it's really going on. And so they're very, of course, they're like wild animals. They're completely instinctive. They're completely authentic. They're not doing anything just because you want them to do it. And there is something about watching that and being around it and then, you know, giving a chicken a cuddle, that just, I don't think it happens consciously, but I think that at some subconscious level, you reconnect with yourself because you're seeing the animals are so connected with themselves, you know, and it's hard for you to be fake. In fact, we ran a workshop for some leaders some years ago, and we went to a place where they did horse whispering, so equine guided leadership, and it was a workshop where you're working with the horses all day. And one of the girls there, she started crying in the morning, and she basically didn't stop all day. And of course, I was running the workshop, so I inquired about why she was so emotional. And it turned out that she has horses. She works with horses outside of work. But she kept both of her parts of her life very separate. So her horses were her time outside of work. And then there was work, where no one knew that she had any connection with horses. She was very, very driven, very, very serious, very competitive. And then at this workshop, two worlds were colliding. So her colleagues from work were seeing the person that she was outside of work, and it was very uncomfortable for her to have this secret life, in a sense, exposed, or for the two parts of her life to blend. And she realized at work she was completely out of integrity. So that for her, so of course she was crying, the relief of it, the kind of realization of it, the sort of, I am this person outside of work, and I have not been able to be this person inside of work. And being with the animals released all of that. And I'll just never forget these tears were relief, that, you know, it was a release of something she'd been holding so tight. And I really think nature, being outside, one of the things we learned when we were traveling is we don't need a lot of inside space. We don't care. We live in an RV, it's fine. But we need outside space. So when we moved back, for me to put stuff in my freezer, I have to go outside because it's in the basement and the stairs are downstairs. The stairs are outside the house. So everything about our life now requires me, as part of living here, to go outside. And it's very, very important, I think, as human beings.
We do need a lot of space. We need open space. We need to spread our wings. We need to connect with nature. It's relaxing. It's therapeutic. We need to touch dirt, roll around in it if you must. We don't get that opportunity, being in a building all day and busy life. We don't get to go to the park and beach. It's necessary for well-being. I agree with you. I am taking much of your time, and I have one more question before I let you go. For as leaders who want to develop themselves, as you own your business, your leadership business, what are some tips that we can take to develop leadership skills?
Well, I actually think that all leadership development really is personal development. You know, all this stuff, all the fancy tools and techniques that universities and professors come out with, you know, books are written about it. I think that a lot of it's nonsense. I think we're the best leaders when we're the closest version of ourselves that we can be. And so the way you become the best and closest version of yourself is all personal development. It's all self-awareness. It's all understanding your values, your needs, your drivers. What does success look like to you? What does a happy, blended, integrated life look like for you? What kind of person are you, and what kind of person do you aspire to be? Or who is the person within that you can release? And when we do that, yes, it might not look like a conventional, what we all think of as a leader, but we don't need those kind of leaders. We don't need any more big, charismatic, pushy, bullying, kind of macho white guys. You know, we need gentle, feminine energy, caring, listening, coach-like, intuitive, heart-driven people. And that kind of leadership comes from your own self-awareness and your own personal development.
Well put, because it's an opportunity to bring in your authentic self, bring in your gifts, because your gifts are not my gifts. My talents are not your talent. It's going to vary. It's different. But how do we bring it together to work together collectively? It's important to harness our gifts, our talents, what we are designed to do, what that purpose is, because we are wired differently.
Yeah, we need that variety. There is no one model of leadership. It comes in all sorts of shapes and sizes.
It's a very interesting take on leadership. I haven't heard it that way, but you're absolutely right. It is personal development. And thank you so much for sharing that. Please tell us, how can our listeners connect with you?
Well, the best way is, there's a few things. So definitely check out the website. There's loads of content, loads of free stuff on there. And that's where you can also find the podcast. And it's abrilliantgamble.com. And then we have a Facebook group for anyone who is planning to escape corporate life and take their own brilliant gamble, start their own business, whatever it is they want to do. We've got a Facebook group called Corporate Escapees, and you can join the A Brilliant Gamble Facebook page, and then you can follow me on Twitter, which is @brilliantgamble.
For sharing. Well, morning enthusiasts, you heard it first. This is Blair Palmer, and she is the author, speaker, and podcaster, and a coach. And she talked about today her morning routine, the need to wake up without an alarm. Let your circadian clock kick in, and it will after 66 days of doing it. Journaling, it's important. I talk a lot about gratitude journal, and she's talking about writing in your journal and actually assessing what state of mind you wake up in. Because as we spoke about, it's not the same every day. We don't tend to wake up in a good mood, and so we have to actually keep going with the rituals so that our body catch up, our mind catches up to, because we are in control of setting the day and setting the tone. And I love that you assess your mental state, and that sets the tone for your day and the rest of the day. You also talked about laughing and consuming stimulating content, podcasting or Netflix or something funny, which I think the audience can actually learn from and actually start practicing on their own. It is great. You pet the animals. There's interact connection that needs to take place. We're connected people. And so we need to touch warmer bodies. We need to stay connected. And I love that you shared about leadership tips, that it is personal development at its best. And I agree 100%. And my audience, you heard it here first. Blair, we thank you for coming on the show, and we hope you have a blessed
day. Thank you very much. You too.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew. Topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.